Welcome back to The New Talk, the Bob Davis Podcast, Podcast 370 in the kitchen. You know, I would love to be outside on the deck, but here again, this is what drives me crazy about Minnesota. It's too cold out there. It's 50 degrees. It was beautiful this weekend. It's 50. It's going to be 48 tomorrow. I have a cold, so this is one of those podcasts that, you know, I want to make sure everybody's all set and ready for the week, and there's lots to talk about, so we'll do that in this podcast. Need to talk about the U.S. and the world economy, a new way to work. Found another story about a new way to work, and it's really cool. This is becoming a theme on the podcasts, and actually in my life, which I love. And then some observations on the Iowa Republican Party's Lincoln dinner in Iowa this weekend. I was going to go down, and it just didn't look like it was going to be that big of a deal, but apparently it was. And also the upcoming Iowa straw poll, which looks like a big deal, but apparently it's not going to be. So we're going to talk about that. And I can't forget that tonight, as I speak, not as you listen, but as I speak, the final Mad Men episode is playing out across the country. So I'm going to talk about that. And I don't worry, no spoilers, because I haven't seen it yet. So I can't tell you what happens in the last episode of Mad Men. Well, I'm sitting here staring at a piece of copy for Ryan Plumbing and Heating from winter. And I was talking about how the snow and the cold is coming and all this other thing. And I kept thinking, I haven't written new copy for Ryan. I've just been talking to Greg about stuff that we want to mention in the commercials. And I really haven't written any new spring copy because I'm waiting for summer to arrive. And here it is, 50 degrees. So you might not be thinking about this, but if you haven't turned on the AC yet, now I haven't turned my AC on yet. But when you do, you want to make sure it works. And so I want everyone to be aware of the fact that Ryan Plumbing and Heating can come out and check your AC. Sometimes they have to clean the coils. Sometimes filters have to be changed. You want to make sure that it works. So call Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul to have your AC checked before it gets warm. It has to be at least 70 to check the AC. So you probably have about a week yet, given this crazy weather. In St. Paul, you call 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Also, remember Ryan when it comes to emergency service. They do great emergency service. They're available if you need them. 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Metro-wide from St. Paul for over 60 years. Ryan Plumbing and Heating. And thanks, Greg, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. So I guess we should start with Mad Men. No, I have not seen the final episode. Since I cut the cable cord, there's only been one instance where I wished I had cable. Now, if I wanted to see the final episode, I could go to Pirates Bay or something and rip it. But I don't like doing that. I buy the episodes. The only time that I missed a final episode was the final episode of Breaking Bad. And now the second episode of Wishing I Had Cable is the final episode of Mad Men. The plot lines and what happens have been kept under wraps, so nobody knows. And the weird thing about cutting these podcasts kind of in the middle of the night is, actually, if you're listening to this, you know what happens since you're listening to this the day after. Hard to believe that this show has been on for 6 seasons. And I used to think of it as a 60s biopic. In fact, I did a podcast about the show, and I had to look it up on my own page, thebobdavispodcast.com. I had to use the search window. And I can't believe it was podcast 22, way back at the beginning of podcasting, at the beginning of the third season in 2009, I think it was. Now I just think of the show really as a story about people I know. And I love that podcast because it has cuts from the show in it. And I talk a lot about Don Draper and my dad and that generation. And as the show progressed, I kind of stopped thinking about it in 60s terminology and just kind of started viewing it as a true soap opera TV show. And you just want to find out how things end. I think the best Mad Men was the one where Kennedy was killed. Officially, it was the end of the 50s, not the beginning of the 60s. That was one of those moments when things were going along one way and then they suddenly changed. And it was really well done in the show. Another one, Pearl Harbor, you know, December 7th, 1941. Kennedy's assassination, November 22nd, 1962. Or was it 63? Yeah, it was 63, sorry. And then 9/11, which of course was 9/11/2001. And I was writing this down tonight, thinking about this podcast, and I thought, wow, you know, Kennedy's assassination happened just 21 years after Pearl Harbor and the start of World War II, and it's been 14 years since 9/11. So it's weird. Six seasons of Mad Men has gone by in a flash. And I'm pretty excited about watching it tonight after I get through. One of the reasons I'm doing this so late tonight, it's well after midnight, is because I'll wait until, I think the last airing is in the Pacific time zone, which should be around now sometime. And then as soon as that's over, iTunes throws it up on iTunes so that you can watch it. So I'll be watching it about 3:30 this morning. Anyway. We have come a long way since the 60s in this country, and there, you know, sure, a lot of the same kinds of themes and things look familiar to us in the world, buildings and things of that nature, but a lot of things don't. They especially look familiar in a show that's designed to attract a younger audience. But it is so different today, socially, technologically, economically, and yet so much in the same is the same in some weird ways. I will let you draw your own conclusions about what is similar and what is different. As I said, I'm doing this podcast late at night when I have a cold because the last episode should be ready to be downloaded from iTunes as soon as the last airing in the Pacific time zone. So I'm looking forward to seeing the last show. Well, if you're not hearing about the train crash and how we have to spend more money on Amtrak so the Northeast Corridor can be continue to function so people can take the train from New York to Washington, or the Delta Force taking down an ISIS loser in Syria, of all places, which actually is going to provoke a completely separate podcast later this week when I feel better because, you know, every time one of these things happens where we do, I don't know if you heard or not, but if you weren't paying attention this weekend, Delta Force raided a stronghold in Syria for ISIS, and they captured, and I don't even know the guy's name. They don't even know the guy's name. He used another name, Anam Daguerre, and we don't know who he is. So I don't know that I would jump to any conclusions about the success of the operation at this particular moment in time. I'll do a whole podcast on it. Or perhaps the strange Gabriel's horn-like sounds being heard all over the world every now and then. Just do a search on it on YouTube, and you'll be amazed at what you see. Or George Stephanopoulos and Hillary Clinton, or any of this nonsense. You might hear some tut-tutting about the economy in the present time frame. And I want to talk about the economy a little bit, because you know, usually what I do on Sunday nights is I look for these stories that I have the most passion for, and then those are the ones that I do. The United States, believe it or not, just had its worst month since the recession, according to the Wall Street Journal. But there's nothing to worry about, right? Because it's all due to the resolution of the strike on the West Coast ports, the container, you know, whatever those ports are out in Los Angeles, supposedly. The economy, the U.S. economy fell 1% in March, which is the largest drop since December of 2008. And despite stuff on realclearmarkets.com, you know, and in the financial blogs and stuff, nobody has said a word about it because we're all too focused on these idiots running for president and Hillary Clinton and Jeb Bush. And I don't think anyone can say with any degree of confidence what is going on with the U.S. economy. Seems like every time I see a story about the U.S. economy, it's filled with caveats and excuses and ends with a sunny paragraph about how it's all going to change next quarter. Indeed, we're back to the expectation that this was done or this happened, therefore, then things are going to get better. Remember, for example, the big stimulus package. We did this, and so the economy is going to grow. And Obamacare was going to revolutionize the economy, and the economy was going to grow. And then we had winter. And when it got warm, people were going to go back to the stores. And then gas prices collapsed, which was going to act like a tax cut, and consumers would rush out to spend the windfall. And now people are actually writing things like, eventually people will spend the windfall from lower gas prices. No, they aren't going to spend the windfall from lower gas prices because First of all, it isn't that much of a windfall. Secondly, that's just going into household expenses right now. Reuters reports that U.S. manufacturing has fallen for the fifth straight month, and then you have to read deeper into the story to find out, and I knew this anyway, that, and my friends in manufacturing understand this and are feeling it, the manufacturing numbers are weighed down by slowdowns in mining and utilities. I was talking about this today. That's basically the oil industry. So, remember when they said cheaper oil was good for the economy? Well, apparently it's not. You can forget about the consumer picking up the slack and spending the windfall from lower prices of gas because of whatever reason. Nobody knows. You look at the consumer numbers and everybody says consumer confidence is down. You know, how can that be if gas is, quote unquote, so much cheaper? The point many are missing is this. Let's just assume for a second that the weaker dollar benefited the energy sector, acting as a subsidy, if you will, in making energy cheaper since it's priced in dollars. And so that benefited the U.S. oil companies when the price of oil was very high, $100 plus a barrel. Now that the dollar is relatively stronger and energy consumption is down in places like China, that acts like kind of a, I hate to say it, perfect storm in terms of suppressing prices. And so the subsidy has been removed and the energy sector is tumbling. If we had a really strong economy right now, my question is, shouldn't something else be picking up the slack? And not necessarily consumption. Well, you look at housing. We're building new houses, but not enough. And a big percentage of the house deals are still investors paying cash, and people are still having trouble getting home loans, even with low percentage interest. And other industries which employ people in a broad swatch of the economy aren't growing. Are there jobs being created? Well, I mean, that's a really interesting question. It's not easily answered because the labor statistics are very much estimates. So I've heard experts say that you should have thrown the latest unemployment numbers in the trash because it's almost all, hokum or magic with numbers because they have models that they don't really know how many people are being employed. And so they use mathematic modeling to employ them. And if it's anything like the other stuff that we use models for, a lot of these models go back to the 1950s, mathematic models. So I don't know that I trust the unemployment numbers. I do know that lots of low-skilled part-time jobs are being created according to the Labor Department numbers. Whenever you look at it, it's low-skilled part-time type jobs, and there are still lots of people out of the workforce. So you have to be very careful about what you're reading and try to figure out. What I'm trying to do is try to put all this into one place so you can kind of get a better picture. Consumer sentiment is dropping. And the only reason I mention it, I hate this number because I don't know what it means. But it is dropping. And it's the reason I'm using it is because none of the analysts or economists seem to have a clue why. You just get really silliness when it comes to analyzing why people are not bullish on the U.S. economy when all you hear about on Wall Street is the bull market and the stock market and so forth. So it's a very interesting disconnect going on right now with the U.S. economy. HSBC chief economist Stephen King said recently that the world economy is like the Titanic. Policymakers are going to be in a pickle if we head into another recession. Wage growth is at a stall. Productivity has been at a stall for quite a while. China is slowing down rapidly. And apparently whatever the government is doing isn't working. They're talking about 7% growth. And, you know, the rule of thumb in China is anything below 6% is a recession or depression in China. And that means it could mean any number of things with China because the Chinese people kind of have a deal with the communist government, which is you give us growth and we'll leave you alone. That's sort of an unspoken deal in China. And if they drop below 6% growth, there's going to be some issues. But the thing is, the attempts to reinflate the Chinese economy aren't working. Their debt is massive compared to their GDP. We're talking about 237% or something like that of the GDP in China. So debt remains high in China and across the world, but interest rates are being held low by central banks, and Japan and Europe and China are also employing some form of quantitative easing. I hate to call it money printing because it's really injecting resources into the market. markets. But let's just say that they're already injecting stimulus into their economies and it isn't really working very well, especially in Japan and Europe. So there's nowhere to go for central banks, essentially pushing on a string. I guess that's where that comes from, that saying. And they haven't got any ammunition to quote unquote stimulate if things go south. Now, the thing that bothers me about the economy is the idea that this is the way things are going to be, that we've entered a new normal. And what is offered in justification of this quote-unquote new normal is a grab bag of nonsense. Institutions are changing slowly. Manufacturing companies are hiring fewer workers. Our economy is entering a period where there are fewer long-range wage prospects. The prospect that we're in the middle of a reset to a robot economy is coming in to factor all this out. And I will just offer this with my limited understanding, as near as I can figure from reading about economics and listening to people and sometimes being taken aback by what they say, even people I agree with. And it kind of does have a Mad Men kind of connection. We've followed a certain path since January of 2009, and really since 2000 and 2008, since the financial crisis and the end of the Bush administration, very similar in an odd sort of way to the Depression, in the sense that Herbert Hoover is the one that implemented a lot of the big government policies that were continued by the Roosevelt administration, which in later analysis, people like Amity Schles and others have concluded that, in fact, what prolonged the Depression was the government reaction and all the things like the National Recovery Act and things of that nature. A lot of that was Hoover. So we can blame Roosevelt for failing to fix it, but at the same time, a lot of what happened at the end of 2008's financial crisis, TARP and quantitative easing and stimulus, was really the end of the Bush administration. Obama continued these things. And this is where we get the too big to fail, the spending money to stimulate and pumping money into the economy by allowing banks to borrow at 0% and then recycle it into the stock market without loaning it to business people. And is this the Keynesian model of government spending to prime the pump, or what? What model is this? Some people call it hydraulic Keynesianism. I don't know what you'd call what they're doing, from Bush's stimulus, the bailouts, and the Obama stimulus, to cash for clunkers and programs to help people who can't afford to stay in their homes, extending unemployment, and so on. At the same time, we've been raising taxes on corporations and individuals and allowing regulation to creep forward from banks to Main Street. So if there's a new normal, it's back to this Keynesian policy of the Hoover and Roosevelt administrations and the Johnson, Nixon, Carter years. And it doesn't end well because it doesn't work. I personally think we need to have some serious discussion in political circles to a true supply-side approach, which really starts with cutting spending and cutting regulation drastically, corporate taxes, and eventually taxes on individuals. It usually, in most of these conversations, it starts, and I'm talking about Republicans, with quote-unquote reforming the tax code, or we're going to do government better. You know, I'm going to be, whether it's Rubio or Jeb Bush or Paul Ryan, we really understand this stuff, and we're going to be better stewards of the government. You know, I believe that there needs to be vast cuts in the size and the cost of government and, you know, really retaining only those areas that exist to protect our rights and pretty much get rid of everything else. And if we do that and reduce taxes, I think the economy would grow very, very quickly. The other reason I say that is there's too much out there, technologically speaking, at the formation level, at all levels of our society, to be talking about dead in the water as the new normal. I hate that. I mentioned recently that, you know, driverless technology with cars, and this isn't the only thing. There's 10, 15 things that are huge technological changes. But driverless technology and autonomous software is really taking over the country as we speak. And I'm starting to read articles about governments being hard-pressed to figure out what to do about it. And this is what I'm talking about, is their first reaction to a new idea is, well, how do we regulate this and how do we tax it? And then they end up destroying it. We have people in government at the state and local levels talking about banning plastic bags. You know, that's what they spend their time doing, not spending their time trying to figure out how to get out of the way and let people run their businesses. Now, I talk about this all the time, but whether you're talking about medicine, communications, manufacturing, transportation, IT, small and medium-sized businesses, and all the general applications that are working their way through society, there's way too much talk about the stock market and central banks and not enough talk about helping individuals or making it possible for individuals. I don't want to even say helping because I don't want the government to help us. I want them to get out of the way so we can do what we do, which is we solve problems. People will solve their own problems if you get out of the way and let them. And really, Americans should not, really they can't tolerate. We can't tolerate this kind of depressing, it's never going to change talk because of all of these economic metrics that these guys are looking at. There was a lot of that talk in the late 70s. And a lot of those people ended up being proved wrong when the 80s came into play. And we just had a little bit of supply-side economics, put into place in this country, and we had tremendous growth. The bottom line is, in every age, I don't care if it's the 60s, you know, or the 80s, or the 2000s, the future belongs to those who build it, period, not to those who try to analyze it and say, this is what's going to happen, because the truth is, these guys don't know what to happen. I'm reading this book right now, which is actually pretty amazing. It's called The Jungle War. It's by Gerald Astor. It's one of my brother-in-law's books. I've often told the story of my brother-in-law, the Vietnam combat vet, who left me his books. You know, he had boxes and boxes and boxes of books on, he belonged to all these military book clubs, and so I went down there a couple of years ago. My sister said, you got to go out to the shed and you got to decide what you're going to keep and what you're not going to keep. So I threw out a bunch of them. Well, we didn't throw them out. We took them down and sold them. But I took out the best books, the books that I thought would be the best ones to read. So this book is called The Jungle War, and it's about the Burma, China, India campaign in the early days, carrying through all the way to the end of World War II. And they tell a great story about, it was just the sort of the beginning of air assault. And they used gliders to put these guys into an area behind Japanese lines. And they flew in anywhere between 400 and 500 guys, and it was a disaster. The gliders crashed. They were all over the place. They finally got collected, kind of like what happened on D-Day. And one of the gliders was supposed to have a bulldozer because they were going to build an airstrip so they could get C-47s in there and fighters. And so what they would be able to do then is to wreak havoc behind the Japanese lines. And the captain, who was the engineering guy, was killed in one of the glider crashes. So the commander on the ground said to the lieutenant, who was this captain's assistant, do you think, you know, with your limited knowledge of, you know, what he was going to do, do you think you could build an airstrip? And the lieutenant said, yeah, I think I probably could. Would this afternoon be too late? And the story is that they used manual labor. They had Gurkhas and they had, you know, different groups. And that's the other thing about the Burma, China, India campaign that I think is very interesting, because when we think of World War II, we think of it as being American troops or British troops or Canadian troops. But in that part of the world, they were using India, they were using Nigerians, they were using, Sierra Leoneans, all these guys from these former, you know, and current British colonies. And so they just use manual labor, and he built the airstrip by the afternoon, and by the end of the evening, they were able to start getting planes in there. Now, if you'd have looked at that from the outside, you would have said, they're screwed. There's no way that they're going to get this done. But yet, they got it done. We can do great things. We can do great things if we believe that we can do great things. And that's what I mean when I say that the future belongs to those who build it, the people who get going and figure it out. And there are numerous examples from World War II, from the 50s, the 60s, from every age of people that did things that were impossible. They couldn't be done, but yet somehow they did them. This is what irritates me about the economists when they say, well, the metrics this and these numbers say this and this is going to happen. And that's going to happen, and we're going to put these robots in, and nobody's going to have anything to do. They have no idea making those kinds of predictions. Certainly, the numbers might show that, but that doesn't account for the wild card of human nature. And human nature is to thrive, to prevail, and to win, and to build. And we need to start getting back to that in this country, in this country, instead of this morose, well, it's just, no, we can't do it because the numbers say we can. This is just, you know, somebody needs to get up and remind people you can do anything. I don't care what your problem is. You can do anything you want to do. You just have to start doing it. Sometimes it's a small step. Sometimes it's a big step. But you just have to jump. And, you know, what is it? California or bust, right? I talked about the Donner Party in a recent podcast. It's hard to believe that those people dragged those wagons all the way across, you know, the plains up into the salt flats, all the way across the mountains to prosper in California. And they lost a lot of people on the way, but they did it, you know, because there was no going back. They would have died if they went back. So, you know, we need to start thinking about fighting like our back is against the wall, and then you'll see what we can do in this country. So anyway, that's my little inspirational speech. And speaking of, huge article this weekend in the Telegraph about people using Airbnb and office hubs like Hubbud. I think it's called Hubbud or Hubbud to work and live all over the world. So if you live in Minneapolis or Seattle or Los Angeles or Chicago or a place like that, there are these companies that basically do one thing. They provide office space. So you can office at one of these places. You pay them a monthly fee and you office there, right? And there's conference rooms and you work with other people. So if you're a small business person and you're at the level where you want an office, but you can't afford or don't want to buy a building or pay for the whole floor of a building, you go to one of these office hubs and hang out. And, you know, you've got the whole experience of working in an office, but you're not in an office. And of course, then there are things called incubators where people work together on one project to try to build a project up in a short period of time. So the idea is that you can work untethered by an office, because if you, these companies have world, you know, they're across the world, a lot of them. There's an English company that's one of them that has these things all over the world. So if you have a contract with them, you could just go all over the world and use an office. So if you're traveling, you can use an office. There's also places like that at the airports. I'm sure everybody knows what I'm talking about. Well, they've taken this up to the next level, because if you put it together with Airbnb and office hubs, people are now, what they're doing is they're untethering completely. Now, it's just certain kinds of people that do certain kinds of work, you know, coding. There are doctors that are living all over the world who, for example, in Canada, there's a big market for remote doctors because they don't have enough doctors in Canada. So these doctors are using Skype and other technology to provide medical care for people when there's just a nurse practitioner there to sort of implement. But you know, it's great because people, this is the way it's going to be in the future. It's a glimpse of the model of work in the future, completely untethered, which is why I love Mobile Podcast Command. You know, I talk about the ambulance. I love the ambulance. I was over there this weekend at its little revetment, firing up the engines to make sure everything functions right. And when we talk about building the future, you know, I guess I talk about Mobile Podcast Command because here's what I've learned about Mobile Podcast Command. Why am I renting a duplex? Because really, I could put everything in that vehicle and I could just be on the road permanently. The only reason I don't is because I've built my business here. And as it grows regionally, I'm definitely considering the idea of just saying, cut the tether. You don't need to be here because everything that I have here, I can upload from anywhere. I've got to get portable Wi-Fi antenna and some other things. But at that point, I'll be able to do anything I want from whenever and wherever I want. So why would I just be locked down to one place? And this is happening throughout the economy. It's very interesting when I think something like this, and then I see this confirmation come up where I see these stories consistently. I know that that is a glimpse of how work will be done in the next 50 years. People aren't going to need to go to offices unless they want to or unless they're absolutely necessary to be there, like a hospital, for example. You know, if you think about the 1970s and you think about how much has changed since the 1970s, speaking of Mad Men, which is now in the 70s, one of the last episodes, which I can reveal now, one of the guys was going to go to work for Learjet. And I was thinking, I was making dinner tonight, and I was thinking, you know, at that time, Learjet, they were talking about, you know, executives fly in these planes all over the world. It's the cream of the crop and so forth. Learjet at that time was like the Apple computer of its day. You know, it was the coolest, most amazing thing in the world. And Liz Taylor and Richard Burton made it famous because they rode around on a Learjet. So that started in the 70s, and look at the world of private air travel now. Look at the rest of the world. Look at the things that you see in the 1970s or remember from the 1970s and think about how much has changed. And that was just 35 to 40 years. The next 20 to 30 years, things are going to move very, very fast. And these new technologies that I mentioned are going to come in very quickly. And we need to give people at every level of the economy every single chance to make the most of it without telling them what to do or how to do it. Just let people figure it out, because they will. And speaking of mobile podcast command, I'm just going to close with some quick statements about the Iowa State Republican straw poll in August. This weekend was the Lincoln dinner down there. And, you know, I've got a schedule of events, and I thought, you know, I should really go to the Lincoln dinner. And I thought, well, it doesn't look like it's going to be that big of a deal. Well, it turned out to be a big deal. Politico covered. They were all down there, which to me is, I get a little bothered, because I think Iowa's getting way too much attention over this. Now, Jeb Bush is out of the straw poll, and Rand Paul probably won't be there. Politico says the straw poll is dead as a doornail if these other candidates don't show. And that's actually why I'm going to go, because I am a little bit irritated that one state, even over New Hampshire, with gatherings of 1,000 people or more at a time, is able to kind of keep this going as though the presidential race was going on. I hate Saturday Night Live, but they did a great parody of Hillary Clinton campaigning for president right now, which really kind of talks about, it didn't mention any Republicans, but it kind of talks about all of these people that are campaigning. And it's summer, you know, we're nearing summer, we're into summer of 2015. The election isn't until next year. And it's irritating to me that, and what it's doing is, what's doing it are the early primary states, Iowa, Florida, New Hampshire, I'm trying to think of a couple others, even Texas, but there's not even that much campaigning. Iowa has all these get-togethers, which to me is turning into this disgusting, cloying bunch of political groupies who just wet their pants at the opportunity to meet any Joe who declares his candidacy. And it's really nothing more than Main Street ballyhooing for these small towns in Iowa. And I mean, and that's the idea that I'm going into this with. I want to see it up close, and I want to tell you exactly what it is. Because when you look at the wide angle lens, or the actually not wide angle lenses, but the tight angle lenses, it looks like there's all these people there and all these fawning spectators. And in many of these situations, we're talking about a couple of hundred to 1,000 or 2,000 people. It's nothing compared to the population as a whole and compared to the attention that these guys are getting. And I think it's ruinous. I think it is ruinous to the Republican Party. And actually, I applaud Bush and Rand Paul for not attending. So far, of course, that could change. But I think it's time that somebody, in the most gentle way possible, put a sock in Iowa's mouth. When I go down there, we'll see if that assumption stays. Thanks once again to Ryan Plumbing and Heating for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast. Don't forget to get your AC checked, because here's the thing. It's a matter of efficiency. You know, if you haven't had your AC checked in a while, it's inefficient. It's going to cost you money this summer. And I'm telling you, it's going to be a hot summer. I'm sick. I got a sore throat. I got a cold. It's cold out there. We can't get warm. This is me talking. I just can't seem to get warm. But in any case, sooner or later, it's going to get warm. And when it does, think about Ryan Plumbing and Heating to check your air conditioning and save you some money. Also, think about them for emergency service, whether it's AC, whether it's heat in the winter, or plumbing. 651-224-4771 in St. Paul. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Metro-wide from St. Paul for over 60 years, Ryan Plumbing and Heating. Got to thank the digital sponsor of the Bob Davis Podcast, Mad K Studios, creating quality original automotive artwork. And Mad K is going to be out at the Antique Auto Shows this summer. I know that he's going to be at the big one at the State Fairgrounds. Maybe I will be there too. I'll tell you more as we get closer to these events. Click on the banners on the BobDavisPodcast.com about these sponsors, as well as all the sponsors of the BobDavisPodcast.com. And also, if you're interested, I have great packages for digital sponsorships to the BobDavisPodcast.com. Lots of page views, and it's viable. It was never intended to be viable as a website. It was just intended as a place to hold the podcasts. But people are starting to come to the page and check it out, and that means it's an advertising opportunity. So send me an email, and maybe we can hook up. Also, thanks for listening on Stitcher.com, iTunes, or TuneIn, and now Blog Talk Radio. Look for the player. It's right there on the front page of the BobDavisPodcast.com, right underneath the donate button for the BobDavisPodcast.com mobile command podcast unit. I can't even say it. mobile podcast command unit. And I should mention also, there's a TuneIn player as well. If you don't want to go to TuneIn's website, or you don't want to subscribe to the RSS feed, or you don't want to listen to the podcast right on the page of the bobdavispodcast.com, you can click on one of those players, whether it's Blog Talk Radio or TuneIn. And those are just there to feature so that you can see that it's there. And I guess that's about it. I think I'll go back to drinking my throat coat. And now it's time for the last episode of Mad Men. Is that too loud, or is that going to be okay? Okay. No, I gotta grab my coffee and then we're gonna walk. Okay, it's coming on. It's coming on.